Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and now the longtime Brooklyn DA, Charles Joe Hines, might be facing a serious criminal charge himself. The New York Times broke this story last night. Let's get details from New York Times correspondent Stephanie Clifford. Hi, Stephanie. Welcome to WNYC today.
Hi, Brian.
So this involves money seized from drug dealers, of all things. Who's accusing Joe Hines of what?
This is the city's Department of Investigations, which is a unit that looks into things like corruption charges, things like that. They did a long investigation starting in November, and they found that Joe Hines used this fund, this office fund at the DA's office, which was money seized from drug dealers and other criminal defendants, and he used that to funnel a political consultant $200,000 for work on his reelection campaign.
What's supposed to become of that money, typically? How does that work? Does the DA's office, rather than the police, seize money from drug dealers when they're arrested?
They do. It's called an asset forfeiture fund, and it can be used for legitimate purposes. It can be used for office expenses and things like that. This was couched under, you know, this consultant submitted invoices as though he were just an office consultant, but in fact, the investigation found he was working almost entirely on Joe Hines' campaign for this 18 months for which he was paid over $200,000.
So according to the city's Department of Investigation, these checks were written from the criminal forfeiture funds account directly to this political consultant, Mortimer Matz. That seems
right.
So visible. Why would Hines have written checks directly to his political consultant without thinking he would get caught?
The whole thing seems so visible. I mean, in addition to the money that they tracked, they have all of these emails from Joe Hines on his office email account, writing about his political campaign, telling workers at the DA's office to schedule campaign stops or check into whether an endorsement has been published. I think he just got to the end of his term and sort of forgot about all of the rules that he was supposed to be following, or thought at that point that he could just flout them.
Listeners, anybody in Brooklyn shocked by this D.A. Hines investigation? 212-433. I don't want to say indictment because it's not an indictment yet, right? It's a report.
No, it's not. So they'll be referring it to the Attorney General's office for possible criminal prosecution. The charges here that he could be facing are larceny on the misuse of public funds, and that can be a felony depending on the amount that they can prove. And he could also be facing misdemeanor charges for doing the campaign work on his office email and during office hours.
212-433-WNYC on this investigation into Charles Hines when he was Brooklyn DA, just got defeated for reelection in the fall, allegedly using forfeiture money from drug dealers for his campaign consultant. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692 for Stephanie Clifford, who reported the story for the New York Times and broke it last night. How did the investigation get started? What tipped off the Department of Investigation to start poking around in Joe Hines' email?
It was two government entities. They didn't say who it was, but two separate government entities asked them to look into this. They then subpoenaed around 6,000 emails that Joe Hines had written during these 18 months, and 95% of them had to do with the campaign. So during this time when he was running a pretty important office in Brooklyn, dealing with things like all of these charges of wrongful conviction, his focus was on getting reelected, which failed.
We may have advanced the story a little bit in the WNYC newsroom this morning. They reached out to the current DA who defeated Joe Hines in the fall, Ken Thompson, to ask what his involvement might have been or anything that they know, and they issued this short statement that says, shortly after becoming district attorney, DA Thompson's office received a subpoena from the New York City Department of Investigation. This office has cooperated fully by providing all documents pertinent to their investigation. So that's pretty bland, but maybe it also indicates between the lines that, hey, they were only too happy to turn over all the emails that their office computers probably had that Joe Hine sent in his last couple of years.
Yeah, I can't imagine there was a lot of resistance. There was no love lost between those two. And some of these emails from Joe Hines about Thompson are, you know, sort of amusing on one front and a little sad on others. He calls him a turkey. He is just enlisting help all over the place, saying, I'm going to have to respond to Thompson's charges on this. What should I say? You know, the other part of this is that a quite well-respected judge, Barry Kamens, is also implicated in this report for basically advising Hines politically, which a judge is not supposed to do. And there are lots of emails from Kamens as well where he's telling him, hey, I hear this question's going to be asked at this debate, or why don't you shape your answer or your submission to an editorial board in this way? And it's fairly startling to see an active sitting judge getting so involved in a political campaign.
They're old friends, I understand. Is that right?
They are old friends, yep. Nevertheless, the Code of Judicial Conduct is pretty clear on this stuff. You know, I imagine it does happen a lot in Brooklyn and in the other boroughs, but I don't think most people are writing it down on email.
Richard in East Hills on Long Island has a question about the judge aspect, I think. Richard, you're on WNYC. Hi.
Hi, thanks a lot. Yeah, I've been following this for the Times. It's really interesting. And I guess you covered the judge issue. In addition to the other issue that the Times brought up, that the head of the Department of Investigation is a political opponent, or he had actually run against the DA several years ago, and how they're going to manage that kind of conflict of interest or whatever that would imply.
All right. Are you familiar with that charge? Or?
Yeah. The head of the Department of Investigation is a guy named Mark Peters. He ran unsuccessfully against Hines in a 2005 election. You know, I haven't heard much challenge in the report on that basis. They were political opponents, but
I'm completely speculating here, but that might have led Peters to start rooting around in Hines's records at that time, or receiving leaks from people who, for whatever reason, wanted Hines out and therefore started giving Peters information, although that's a long time ago. That's 9 years ago, and it seems like these alleged transgressions were much more recent.
Yeah, the transgressions were leading up to the November 2013 campaign, so some time had passed. You know,
and going back how far? Do you have that? Going back how far, according to the DOI report, was he using this money seized from drug dealers for his own political purposes?
They were examining the 18 months before the election, the payments to Mortimer Matz, the consultant, and he was employed as a sort of public relations consultant to the office, I believe from 2003 on.
Uh-huh.
From 2003 to 2013, Hines paid, or the office paid him about $1.1 million from that fund. However, a lot of that may have been legitimate public relations work for the office of the DA.
But wait a minute. Yes. An individual can do both jobs at the same time. He can get paid as a consultant for the office of the district attorney by the public and at the same time be a consultant for the reelection campaign?
That's the problem. So his specific role, as the district attorney described it, was that even while he was clearly doing all this campaign work, that he was supposed to be a public relations consultant for the office. So the investigation uncovered that, in fact, he wasn't doing public relations work for the office. He was doing work for Hines's campaign.
Oh, so maybe that's one of the reasons Hines thought he could get away with it, because the office had a long history of writing legitimate checks to this guy.
Exactly.
So they continued to write checks for him even when his role had changed to a campaign consultant, which is supposed to come out of campaign funds.
Right.
Has Charles Hines responded?
He has not. He has not responded. He has been under a lot of fire lately since leaving office. There are a lot of questions about his final years in office, about the way he handled some of the wrongful conviction cases, about the way he handled some of the sex abuse charges within the ultra-Orthodox Jewish community, so he is not is not new to controversy on this stuff.
Do you know where he is? Were you able to find him and get a no comment, or is he?
No, we tried several people around him, but weren't able to get to him directly on this.
Lenore in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Lenore.
Hi, I am just shocked. I'm so shocked and so disappointed. In 2005, D.A. Hines prosecuted former Brooklyn Democratic boss and Assemblyman Clarence Domer for depositing a $5,000 campaign check into his personal account, of which Clarence Norman got 6 years. They were both went to St. John's, and they were like friends. And he came out being this, you know, kind of crusader against crime and corruption. And to do this is horrible. He, D.A. Hines, did a really good job with establishing the mental health court, helping the formerly convicted felons. His legacy is now tainted, and this is just awful. And it gives me just a sour taste about putting your faith into people who you think are just really good and ethical, and then find out that they're not. I'm just really disappointed. Really shocking.
That's a really sad call, Lenore. Thank you very much. And it is a really sad call because, Stephanie, Joe Hines, for many years, had a reputation, whether you liked him or didn't like him, of being Mr. Clean. And he was, you know, setting about doing the public's business as he saw it. And people might have policy disputes or priority disputes or whatever. But you could see how someone like Lenore and a lot of other people might be disillusioned from the whole system from something like this.
Yeah, absolutely. He was considered, you know, the great liberal hope to sort of help Brooklyn, help the people of Brooklyn. And as she mentioned, he instituted mental health courts. He did a lot. He was really supportive of programs that were alternatives to incarceration. So instead of going to prison, you might do sort of a community program instead. And there was a lot of good work that he did, and it sort of blew up in these final months of his tenure, it looks like.
Michael in the East Village has a question about this forfeiture account, I think. Michael, you're on WNYC. Hi.
Hi, Brian. How are you?
Okay.
I just wanted to bring up the NYPD's use of the civil forfeiture laws that have been in place since the 80s. The New Yorker and Gothamist did some pieces on this within the last year. And basically what these laws allow are the NYPD to confiscate money that was taken in an investigation when there, you know, are arrests, whether or not charges have been filed or people have been convicted. I've heard, you know, both through these articles as well as through, you know, personal experience, you know, citizens that have been essentially robbed by the NYPD, never, you know, charges were never filed. The money was, you know, taken under the civil forfeiture laws, and they go into some sort of black hole, and people are not able to get their, you know, cash back. And I was just curious, since that's a, you know, a big part of this story, you know, the civil forfeiture. I've heard a lot of it just goes straight into the NYPD pension fund and things like that. So I was wondering if, you know, you guys had more information about that, and perhaps this, you know, deserves a, you know, a story or, you know, study on its own.
Yeah, sounds like this does deserve a segment on the show on its own. How and by what authority does law enforcement take money from an individual who hasn't been convicted of something, and what does become of that money? Stephanie, are you familiar with that larger area?
A little bit. It sounds like Michael is probably more so, but I know there are lots of calls for reform around this because it's so hard to track. It's one of the many areas in the criminal justice system where I think individuals feel a little bit powerless when law enforcement comes and starts to enforce. So I know there are lots of calls from groups to reform how asset forfeiture is done. I don't know how far along those are.
All right. We will follow up on the show. I can promise you that. Judge Kamens, he got caught because the DOI was looking at Joe Hines' emails having to do with the use of this forfeiture money, and they just came upon emails to and from Judge Kamens, and, oh, look, this guy's advising him, even though he's a judge and he's not supposed to do. Was it that kind of thing? Like, look what I found in the email.
I think so. I don't get the sense that they may have been tipped off on Judge Kamens initially, but it was sort of, I believe the number was 800 back-and-forth emails that they found in this time period. And, you know, some of them are just, Kamens is knocking Thompson, who ended up obviously beating Charles Hines In a lot of them, he's helping Hines modify statements or responses or speeches. And it really, it seems to be crossing a line. Kamens' lawyer says this is just the chat of old friends. There's nothing too serious here. But Kamens has been, I think the official wording is, relieved of his responsibilities, of his administrative responsibilities. He has a big job in New York State, overseeing policy and planning for the courts, and he oversees, or oversaw, I should say, the New York City criminal courts until yesterday when he had those titles pulled.
So now this all goes to the New York State Attorney General, and we all just wait to see if he thinks it rises to the level of an indictment against Hines or Kamens?
There are no criminal charges pending against Kamens, I believe. It would be the Committee on Judicial Conduct
right.
that would look into...
Not a criminal charge, an
not
ethics
a criminal charge.
And how long would it take for Schneiderman in this case to presumably decide one way or another whether to charge Charles Hines?
The Department of Investigation did a lot of the legwork here. So in a typical investigation, you know, you might have a year or two of pulling together documents and things like that. But here, the DOI has laid this out fairly clearly. So I'd imagine his lawyers are looking at it, Schneiderman's lawyers are looking at it right now and may respond fairly soon.
Stephanie Clifford broke this story last night for the New York Times. Charles Hines and the Department of Investigation in New York City and Judge Kamens in the bargain. Thank you very much for coming on and talking it through with us.
Thank you.